Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Shabbat HaGadol, the Great Shabbat. Let's be more specific. Recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 8th of Nisan, 5769, which corresponds this year to the 2nd of April, Thursday. This Shabbat is Shabbat Parshat Tzav, that's its regular weekly portion. But, being the Shabbat right before Pesach, it is also called Shabbat HaGadol. Now, it turns out that in every 12-month Jewish year, meaning the ones that have a single Adar, the short ones, that's the majority of the years, 12 out of every 19 years, Tzav will be the Parsha of Shabbat HaGadol. When we have 13 months, two Adars, then Tzav will not be Shabbat HaGadol. It could be Parshat Zachor, or Parshat Parah, or just a regular weekly portion. And a different Sedra, a different Parsha, will be Shabbat HaGadol. So it is linked, but not completely. And yet, people like to look into Tzav and see perhaps something that clues us in to the Pesach, to the pre-Pesach aspect of this particular Shabbat. But we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. We'll talk more about that in a moment. First, Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121. Shir lama alot esa einai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yiminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yareach baloyla. Adonai yishmorcha mikolra yishmoret nafshecha. Adonai Yishmor Tzeitecha Uvoecha Me'ata V'ad Olam. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanatunim Batzara Uvashivya Ha'omedim Bein Bayam Uvein Bayabasha Hamakom Yerachem Aleihem V'yotzieim Mitzara Lirvacha Umeafela Leora Umishibud Lugula Hashta Ba'agala Uvizman Kariv V'nomar Amen. Let's have a musical interlude with a nice Pesach melody, or medley, as the case may be, putting us more into the mood, and then we'll get down to the nitty-gritty of Parshat Tzav, Shabbat HaGadol, Pesach. Next week, the first day of Pesach is Thursday, when I usually record the show. Obviously, I will not be recording it then. If I get a chance on Sunday or Monday, Tuesday maybe, to record for next week's show, then we will have a Pesach edition. Hopefully we will have a show after Pesach. Here in Israel, Pesach ends with the 15th of April Wednesday. Thursday would be clear, called Isruchag, for recording and uploading the program. But this show will sort of be our Pesach show, or the first of our Pesach shows. We did have a little foretaste last week, but this will get really into it, I hope. And we'll get right to it after this musical track. Okay, down to nitty-gritty. We are standing in front of Shabbat HaGadol, so let's start with that. The original first Shabbat HaGadol, in other words, the Shabbat before the actual Exodus, was the 10th of Nisan, according to our tradition. That's the date of this Shabbat, which makes it a little extra special. And whatever miracles are associated with that first 10th of Nisan, translated through the generations, not to the 10th of Nisan, but rather to the Shabbat before Pesach, even though the date floats within the week before Pesach. I don't want to confuse you with that, so let's move on. Probably the first reason for the name Shabbat HaGadol, literally the Great Shabbat, is the Haftarah that we read, the portion in the prophets. It comes from the very end of the book of Malachi, which is part of the 12 small prophet booklets called Treyasar. And in there, we have the famous verse, Hine Anochi Sholeach Lachem et Eliyah Hanavi. Here, God says, I am sending to you Elijah the prophet, Eliyahu Hanavi, Lifnei Bo Yom Hashem, before the coming of God's day, Hagadol Vahanora, the great and the awesome. Veheshiv Lev Avot Al Banim, Velev Banim Al Avotam, and the hearts of fathers will return to their children and their children to their fathers, and this has a lot of connotations. Basically, Hinei Anochi Sholeach Lachem is considered the harbinger of Messianic era, with Eliyahu HaNavi returning to us to tell us of the coming of Mashiach. As such, we're dealing with something very significant here. We are approaching Pesach, the annual celebration and commemoration and reliving of the first redemption of the new people of Israel. We went into Egypt as a family, 70 souls plus wives and some children, grew to a mighty multitude, and many, many years later, the exact numbers are not at issue at this point, we emerged as a full nation on our way to Sinai to receive the Torah, to receive our covenant with God, and become the Jewish nation. That first redemption is what Pesach is all about, Passover. And here, on the Shabbat, right before Pesach, the choice of the reading from the prophets, which follows the Torah portion, and irrelevant and unrelated, technically, to the Torah portion, which I mentioned to you can be one of a few different parshiot, the Haftarah is the one that says there will be a final redemption, a complete redemption of the future. And I want you to know that, and I want you to experience that, and hear this reading on the Shabbat right before you are about to do your annual commemoration and celebration of your very start, where it all began. I think this is a very significant thing, and I think it gets carried into the actual Pesach Seder. Pesach Seder, the major focus is on, we were slaves to Paro in Egypt, and God took us out with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, or mighty arm and an outstretched hand. Biyad Chazaka Uvizroa Netuya. But in the Seder, in the telling of the story, and the singing of the songs, we every so often go beyond the Pesach story, and to that point which already points to the final redemption. For example, starting at the end of the Seder, towards the end, we say, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim habanuya, next year in rebuilt Jerusalem. Rebuilt Jerusalem means not when they finally get the light rail working and various buildings built. That would be very nice also. But it means the building of the Beit HaMikdash at the time of the final redemption. It's not really part of the Pesach story, except that it is. And it's there on the Shabbat before in the Haftorah. It's there at the Seder table in Lashana Haba, or even at the beginning of the Seder with the statement of Hoshata Hocha, Lashana Haba Ba'ara de Yisrael. Now we are here. This was composed originally in Babylonia. Now we are here next year in Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. Hoshata Avdei, now we are slaves, Lashana Haba B'nei Chorin. It shows up in Dayenu. Dayenu, we speak about coming out of Egypt and God punishing the Egyptians and bringing the plagues and our exodus and then coming to the sea and crossing through the sea and wandering in the Midbar way past the Pesach story itself into Shabbat, into Har Sinai, receiving of the Torah, as I mentioned, and into Eretz Yisrael, the building of the Beit HaMikdash and the bringing of Bikurim. Now, at one point in our history, during the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, and again during the second Beit HaMikdash, that was not about the final redemption. It was already about the conclusion of a certain procedure, or not procedure, not the right word, it escapes me at the moment, tahalich in Hebrew, where it went from the Exodus to receiving of the Torah till building the temple in Yerushalayim. Now that we have been without a temple almost 2,000 years, whenever we talk about the Beit HaMikdash, which the Haggadah does mention here and there, we are focusing on the final redemption. I believe it is a healthy concept to include it when we talk about the events of Yetziat Mitzrayim, because alone, just coming out of Egypt, as great as it was, found us in the wilderness, and we had a long way to go. You've come a long way, baby, but you have a tremendous amount to still go. And that's the story and the summary of Jewish history. Now, actually, I bounce back to a previous explanation of Haggadol. I was talking about the Tzedokim, who claimed that when the Torah says Shabbat, it means Saturday, and therefore their date for the bringing of the Omer is different from the traditional Jewish date of the bringing of the Omer. And almost like a built-in statement by our sages that we are dealing with two Shabbatot. We are dealing with a Shabbat, a day of rest called Yom Tov, and a greater day of rest called Shabbat. Greater because the sanctity of Shabbat is greater than that of a Chag. Greater because there are more restrictions as to which categories of creative activities we're not allowed to do on Shabbat than there are on Yom Tov. And the punishment for violation and desecration of the Shabbat is greater than that of Yom Tov. And therefore, coming up to the other kind of day that is called Shabbat, namely the first day of Pesach, the Shabbat before, in contrast, is Shabbat HaGadol. My mind works in analogies, as many of you know, and I thought of two cousins that I have, Big Michael and Little Michael. Little Michael is not a very small person, and Big Michael happens to be decently tall and a big guy, but certainly there are Michaels that are larger than him, larger than he, that who are not called Big Michael, because big is in contrast to little. So, a Shabbat is Shabbat. The Shabbat right before Pesach was designated Shabbat HaGadol to make a point. Yes, the Torah says Shabbat in the context of the bringing of the Omer. They were talking about the Shabbat, which is the Shabbat HaKatan, the lesser Shabbat of Yom Tov. And in contrast, here's a reminder, regular Shabbat is called Shabbat HaGadol. Back to the original Shabbat HaGadol, the day, the 10th of Nisan, when the Jews were commanded to take in a lamb into their homes in preparation of Korban Pesach, the offering of the Paschal Lamb. This was technically a suicidal thing to do in Egyptian society, where their deity was the sheep. And we, when we were asked, what are you doing with a lamb in your house, in your dwelling, we answered, our God commanded us to offer it as a sacrifice to him in another couple of days. We would have expected outrage, if not rioting and massacre, from the Egyptians. Instead, we got acceptance, which is considered a great miracle that occurred on that great day of Shabbat, hence the designation Shabbat HaGadol. There are various and sundry other reasons given for it. We will just add that it is a traditional day for an extra special and often extra long sermon of the rabbi of the shul. Living in Yerushalayim, you see posters up for a week before, at least, announcing the Shabbat HaGadol drasha of the chief rabbi in this place, the other chief rabbi in that place, various and sundry. We at the Israel Center have a Shabbaton this Shabbat. Rabbi Shalom Gold is our guest speaker. He will be giving a regular drasha in the morning of Shabbat HaGadol and a major drasha in the afternoon at 5 o'clock, and in English, and many, many other, I mean, just about every shul that there is, every synagogue, has a major drasha by somebody in the afternoon of Shabbat HaGadol. Part of it is preparation and review of the details of the intricate laws of Pesach, and some of it deals with the philosophy and the hashkafa, the religious outlook that goes and inputs into Pesach. Something to keep in mind is that Pesach is not its only its own holiday. It really is the center of the whole cycle of the year. It's the starting point, but it's more than that. Shavuot is connected to Pesach. Sukkot is connected to Pesach. Zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim, commemorative of the Exodus, finds itself in every Shabbat and in every Chag, and it all really is linked to Pesach. So it's a very special kind of thing, and we will talk more about it shortly. We'll move on past Shabbat HaGadol to the days before Pesach, and then into Pesach itself. We'll be right back.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Shabbat HaGadol, really for Pesach. What you heard in a short 12-second piece at the end of the first half, you just heard in its entirety a Manishtana rendering, a little different from the traditional ones that kids always learn in kindergarten, but a beautifully done musical piece as well. I wish I could tell you which album it's from. I don't remember. When I get my albums organized, I will give much more detail on the songs that I choose. But since we played Manishtana, let's talk about Manishtana. It is not really what's up next. We had spoken about Shabbat HaGadol. I was going to talk a little bit about searching for chametz on the eve of Erev Pesach and the events of Erev Pesach. Hopefully, we'll get back to those events. But now, picture yourself at the Seder table, and a child recites or sings the Ma Nishtana. Let's go back a few steps. It is clear, abundantly clear from the Torah and from the treatment that our sages gave the Seder experience, that it is primarily an educational experience for one generation to transmit events that occurred to our ancestors, to bring it into contemporary times. And a major emphasis is that we say when God took us out of Egypt, not them, referring to a long time ago, b'chol dor v'dor, in every generation a person has to relive the experience of coming out of Egypt, personalize it, internalize it, and in turn transmit that to the next generation. The Mishnah from which the Haggadah is drawn and which forms the nucleus around which the Haggadah developed says the following. After you do a whole bunch of different curious things at the beginning of the Seder, the Mishnah mentions one of them as a starting point. I will add a few. The Seder table is set differently from the way it is the rest of the year. A child who's inquisitive will look at the Seder plate and look at the Seder table, and perhaps he'll have questions. I remember a couple of years ago, my eldest grandson, Devir Moshe, who was born a couple of days after the Seder, he was already almost six, I would guess at the time. He says to me, Wasabi, that's what he calls me, I don't have any questions for the Seder because I know everything. It brought a smile to my lips and a just wait and see. And he warned me. He knows that I want him to ask questions, but he has all the answers already and he has nothing to ask. He was present right at the beginning when I was getting ready for the Seder, and he saw me put on a kittel, a white robe, which in his memory was associated with Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. So my putting it on in preparation for the Seder was a curious act, and he said, Wasabi, why are you putting on a kittel? After I said to him, I thought you had no questions, and he admitted that he did, just that one, I explained to him the significance of the kittel, and it went on from there. And he was the most inquisitive and the recipient of the most responses from the adults in the real meaning of V'higadta Levincha, transmit this to your children. Now, the Manishtana, in the context of the Mishnah, is a backup set of questions for the child who does not know enough to ask his own. If you have an intelligent, and it needs to go along with curious, inquisitive child, then he will find plenty of questions to ask at the Seder table, and he does not need the script from the Mishnah of the Manishtana. Of course, we don't skip Manishtana, no matter who's at the Seder table. It's a tradition. And when you have children and grandchildren around, everyone gets into the act and says it. I remember in my childhood home, I would say, my mother would say it in Hebrew, and I would say it in French, and actually my youngest brother would say it in Hebrew. My mother would say it, read it in English. I would say it in French. An aunt of mine would say it in Spanish. My brother would say it in Yiddish, if I said that already or not. And we had a great time with it. It sort of was a slow start to the Seder, but tradition is tradition. But technically, if you have a genuine question related to the Seder or to the story of the Exodus, and you answer it, that is what the Torah wants, and that's what Halacha wants. More than that, it's a sad Seder table, in my opinion, that has the only questions being the Manishtana. It's got to have more questions, and not just from little kids. An adult sitting at a Seder table who does not know everything has what to ask. And it is possible that there won't be answers at the Seder table, but it's also possible that somebody present will know how to answer those questions. And that's the drift that's supposed to happen at the Seder experience. It is meant in a question and answer format. Now, even though the Manishtana is known as the four questions, there are opinions that we're not dealing with four different questions. We're dealing with one question. Why is this night different from all other nights? Pourquoi cette nuit est-elle différente de toutes les autres nuits? Pardon my French, and especially my French. And the four sentences that follow the general question of why is this night different are illustrations of its unusual nature. Or you can say we're dealing with four questions. Why in all other nights do we have chametz and matzah, and on this night we eat only matzah for the whole 7-8 days of Pesach? Why do we have all kind of vegetables around the year, and on this night there's a focus on maror, bitter herbs? Why do we not have any requirement to dip food, into liquid, into condiment throughout the year, and at the Seder table we're dipping? I remember years ago when the translation, the plain words is, on all other nights we don't dip even once, and on this night we dip twice. Once the karpas in the salt water, and once the morar in the charoset. To which my daughter, who was very young at the time, said, what about French fries and ketchup? Now, she had frequent suppers during the week, which consisted, among other things, of French fries, not fried, but baked, and ketchup that she dipped it into. So to say to her, recite this question, on all other nights of the year, we don't dip even once, and on this night we dip twice, is not a proper question. And she was very correct in asking, and I was very glad that she asked. And we modified the question, as commentaries of the Haggadah do, by saying it means why on all other nights of the year we have no obligation, no ritual, no requirement to dip even once. And on this night we have dipping twice. Now it becomes a question that she could relate to, because I was able to tell her that her French fries in ketchup is a matter of her choice and taste. If she wanted to eat the French fries without ketchup, or if she wanted to dip it in mayonnaise, I would give her mayonnaise for that purpose. But on this night, you are required to dip the karpas, which in many homes today is a piece of celery. In homes with family traditions that came from Eastern Europe, they dip a piece of boiled potato into salt water. Different people use different items. The common denominator, common factor of all of them is borei pri ha'adama. It is a fruit of the ground that we say the blessing on, and there are reasons for that as well. And that's one dipping. And you can say, I would rather dip in applesauce, because you have to dip it in salt water. The best you could get away with is vinegar, or even lemon juice for someone on a salt-free diet. who doesn't even want that little bit of salt that would be diluted by the salt water solution, then he just uses vinegar or lemon juice. But each thing, of course, is asked and answered, and that's the whole point of the evening as well. These kind of questions have to be asked in advance, but there is a learning experience at the Seder table. So he asks about that, and he asks about reclining when we eat, and how come we don't do it all the time. And these are all valid questions, or valid parts of the question. A little bit later in the Seder, we learn of the four children. The Chacham, the wise child, the Rasha, translated usually as the wicked child, the Tam, the simple the child, and the She'ino Yodea Lish'ol, the one who does not know how to ask questions. However you picture those in your mind, and I know that my pictures in my mind were very much influenced by the likes of Maxwell House Coffee, Haggadah, Horowitz Margaretten, Haggadah, Barton's Candy, Haggadah, the free giveaway Haggadot that we grew up with in previous generations. I would like to suggest, as I have in the past, that every single person of any age is a Chacham, Rasha, Tam, She'ino Yodea Lish'ol rolled into one, and for different topics of knowledge, the ratio changes of these four items. In other words, in some areas of knowledge, a person can be 90% Chacham. He's a wise person with a good grasp of the subject, and when he asks, will ask intelligent questions. The Rasha asks sarcastic questions. He doesn't really feel a commitment towards doing these things, so he tries to justify himself by putting down with snide remarks, but he forms it in a question, and it has to be answered also. The Tam doesn't know enough to say anything more than, what's this? Because the Chacham's question is intricate. The Tam is a simple, what's going on? The She'enu Yodei El Shol is either oblivious to that, not interested in that, he's just sitting there, and he lets things go by him, whether he does it on purpose or not, and he has to be coaxed into asking questions. A Tam would say, why do we have three matzot? The Chacham would ask a variation of that question by saying, why, if on regular Friday night and Shabbat day and Yom Tov night and day we have two loaves of bread upon which we make the blessing, how come here we have three? Now, let's say you know the answer to that question. You say that two represent the standard Lechem Mishnah, double loaves, in honor of Shabbat and Yom Tov, and a third matzah is required because we will be breaking it into two parts. The larger piece will be hidden away for later at the Afikoman. The smaller piece will join the two full sheets of matzah and be that which the Haggadah ceremony and the explanations take place over that broken piece. It is declared as lechem oni, and that's why you have three. A person who knows that is no longer a Chacham, he has graduated back to being a She'eino Yodea Lish'ol. He doesn't know that there are still questions to ask. So you could challenge him by saying, take a look at this introduction to the Haggadah, look at this diagram of the opinions of the Vilna Gaon for Leil HaSeder, which include using two matzot. Two matzot, you need three. Not according to the Vilna Gaon. Not according to the Gra. The Gra? Not the Gra, the Gra. Okay, after you convince the person that you're talking to that the Vilna Gaon actually uses only two matzot at the table, at the Seder, then you're hoping for the following valid question. If a rule of Lechem Mishnah, the double loaves in honor of Shabbat and Yom Tov, is that they be each whole, then a broken piece of matzah doesn't qualify. Does the Vilna Gaon break his matzah too? The answer is yes. So what does he do about Lechem Mishnah? We justified three matzot to have a matzah to break and to have two full whole ones upon which the traditional Hamotzi is recited with the additional Al Achilat Matzah blessing in honor of Yom Tov. So the challenge now comes in the form of a Chacham's question again. A moment ago, before this piece of information, that the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, uses only two matzot, anyone who knew the reason for three had nothing to ask, was a She'eino Yodea Lish'ol. With a She'eino Yodea Lish'ol, one who does not know how to ask, the Gemara has the following solution. At Petachlo, you tell him, teach him to ask. So that's accomplished when you explain this, and the sophisticated Chacham's question knows about the Lechem Mishnah rule, and a Tam might not know, and a Rasha might not care. But if the leader of the Seder and those participating present this material in a pleasant enough way, kids will pick up on it. And they'll say, okay, how does the Vilna Gaon get away with only two matzot? The answer, even if you don't follow the Vilna Gaon's opinion, which most people do not, the answer is, and we learn something from the answer, even though we don't do that, is that that which is considered a defect in a broken piece of bread, a started piece of bread, not respectful to recite the blessings on it in honor of Shabbat and in honor of the double portion of mun which fell on Erev Shabbat, that applies, according to this Vilna Gaon's outlook, not to Pesach. It applies all other times. On Pesach, a broken started piece of bread, or in this case matzah, is not a defect, is not disrespectful. Au contraire, adarabah. The broken piece of matzah is the essential fulfillment of the mitzvah in the Torah to eat matzah in the evening of the 15th of Nisan. Because the broken piece, in addition to the hard, cardboardy taste of the matzah, is meant to simulate slave's bread. Ha lachma anya. This is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in the house of Egypt. And therefore the Vilna Gaon says, if you're looking for status, your whole piece and your broken half are all you need for Lechem Mishnah, therefore he does not use three matzot up front. This was by way of just sharing with you an idea for the Haggadah. We're running low on time. Let's do a quick jump back to the search for chametz on Tuesday night, to the burning of chametz on Wednesday morning, to the unusual once in 28 year event that joins our otherwise busy Erev Pesach this year, Birkat HaChama, the blessing when we see the sun having risen that morning, which is traditionally the morning following the advent, the beginning of springtime. And even though there is a significant discrepancy in days between the actual vernal equinox and the traditional date according to the calculation, which is known as Tekufat Shmuel, inaccurate but preferred for this particular purpose. So we will be saying that blessing. And if you're in Yerushalayim, the place to be is the Kotel area. But there'll be plenty of other places where Birkat HaChama will be said. Technically, it could be said alone, but it should be said in a multitude of people as a sign of respect to God. let me wish you at this point, and I'm sorry we didn't get a chance for more, but that always happens, a Shabbat HaGadol Shalom, and a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a very happy, healthy, prosperous holiday. Sounded like the greeting for New Year, and it is a New Year of type, and that it should be observed not only with joy, but with proper joy. Lehishtameah.